I'm Will Griffin, and this is live in Studio C at Classical 91.1 in Nashville Public Radio. I'm very happy to welcome back Jessica Donovant to live in Studio C. Jessica has been here many times as a member of an ensemble, especially Music City Baroque. But today, it's going to be Jessica and her solo Baroque flute. Why is that so hard to say? Jessica Donovant, good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Will.
Let's start by asking you, what is a Baroque flute relative to a modern flute?
Well, in terms of size and shape, it's really rather similar, but a Baroque flute is always made of wood. Sometimes, very rarely, you'll find one from before our trade laws prohibited it that's made out of ivory. But the one I'm playing today is made out of grenadilla, which is the same thing they make modern piccolos out of. It's in four pieces instead of three. It is conical rather than cylindrical, so that really affects the way you play in tune with yourself, or try to. And it only has one key, so one of the things about Baroque flute that makes it attractive sometimes to modern flute players, and definitely to me, is that you can't have every note be the same strength or the same color or the same dynamic volume, because it's just not attractive or possible with this instrument. Hmm. And composers in the Baroque era exploited that. They knew, just like the flutist knew, that certain keys have to be played certain ways. Unlike modern flute, where our goal is really to have everything be one color, one range of dynamic possibilities. Possibility all the way from the bottom to the top.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you give us a little sample of what's good and what isn't good?
Or absolutely. So why don't I start just by playing you Baroque flute also, rather than modern flute. Modern flutes are built in C, so they're a concert band instrument. Baroque flute is what happened to the tenor member of a Renaissance consort. So it is actually built in the key of D. And if you stay close to D, you're going to get strong, good sound. So here's a D major scale. If I vary from that, if I try to play, say, a B-flat scale at that same volume, it's not quite as attractive. So what we all learn to do from the very beginning is be gentle with those flat keys. Be gentle with those keys that are distant from D major.
So you get to highlight the sweetness
exactly.
of those flat keys.
Well, so if I could say that the first piece I'm going to play is a Telemann Fantasia in D major. To give you a good idea of the difference, let me just play the first two measures of the one in B flat major before we start that. To be gentle and quiet mm-hmm. and close to your heart.
And carefully controlled.
And carefully controlled.
Sure. Well, George Philipp Telemann lived in the 18th century. He was a contemporary of Bach and Handel, among others. And he wrote a little set of fantasias for solo flute. So let's hear the
Absolutely.
One
Absolutely. This one will be in two movements. The first thing you're going to hear is a French overture. So a slow beginning, kind of martial, kind of pompous with lots of ornaments, and then a fast middle part. And then the last movement of this one is a Polish dance.
Thank you. Last music of George Philip Telemann played live in Studio C by Baroque flutist Jessica Donovan. That was a Fantasia in D major from a set of Fantasias by Telemann, who loved to travel and was highly influenced by the places he visited. Tell us again, the two movements were...
What? There was a French overture and then a Polish-inspired dance.
Polish-inspired dance. Jessica Donovan is with us in Studio C today. Jessica is a freelance flutist and a teacher, and she's also the personnel manager of Music City Baroque Ensemble, which is about which we'll hear more later on. But Jessica is passionate about teaching and also performing, especially for us, right?
Right, especially
you're doing
for
a
you
lot of performing these days, so we're glad that you had time to come over today.
Thanks. The next piece I'm going to play is one by Jacques Martin Autater Le Roman. And his name is Jacques Autater, and one thing that I find funny about this family as I move through their music is that many of their sons were named Jacques, so you're not always entirely sure whose music you're playing, but we know about this. It's a piece called Echoes, and it really exploits one thing that the transverse Baroque flute can do, and flutes since then that recorder can't, which is have a wide dynamic range. I like to think of this as Me and My Shadow 1720 style.
Mm-hmm.
That's music of Jacques Autetier called Echo from the early 18th century, around 1720. Jessica Donovan played that piece by Autetier. Jessica, you were saying early on when I was talking with you before the program that it's possible, just possible, that Jacques Autetier had a commercial motive for writing this particular piece, a little disruption by technology, technological innovation in an earlier century.
That's true. The Autetier family were renowned woodwind performers and also makers and teachers. So they published lots of music, but they also made lots of instruments. And although we cannot prove this, we don't know this, it is suspected that the Autetier family split the body of the flute into two pieces. And what that meant is that as you traveled around, you could exchange the upper joint in the body for one that matched the pitch in the town you were going to. And all across Europe, that varied. Now, in modern times, I know whatever orchestra I go sit down with, it's going to be at 440, maybe 442. You know, there's a limited range of possibility. But, you know, different nationality. And much later, Quantz built a flute that had seven or eight, we call these quarter échange, these exchangeable upper body joints, because everywhere he went, he had to be able to play at a different pitch level. And there's only so much with this you can do to affect it with this flute. So that said, I think absolutely the Autetiers were financially motivated to publish their books and their music.
And the recorder had held sway as the primary woodwind instrument for centuries before that.
So, exactly.
And then it somewhat faded away after the flutes.
It really did. Transverse flutes stole away from recorder. One way you notice that is that by the time we get to the high Baroque composers like Bach, Telemann, Handel, they will often indicate by saying either flauto traverso or flauto dolce being recorder, exactly what they meant. Rather than having any treble instrument that could reach a part play it, they would actually indicate. It's useful for me as a modern player when I look at that music and try to figure it out.
More French music, this time from the late 18th century by Joseph Boismortier.
Exactly. Joseph Boutin de Boismortier was a wonderful composer, I think still more known in France and maybe Europe than he is here. Here, flute players mostly play his music because we have so much from him. He won the right to engrave music and publish it and sell it in 1724. And he lived until 1755, so really the second half, little more of his life, he had the ability to make his living, not through having a patron, but by selling copies of his music. And he actually made himself very wealthy doing that. So what I'm going to play is a suite from a book of suites without bass. Normally, if you see a suite or a sonata for flute, you're also going to be accompanied with harpsichord and a bowed stringed instrument or bassoon or something like that, holding down the bass line. These are meant to be played just by a flute player. And Boismortier included all the ornamentation you would need, and they follow the form. What you're going to hear is a prelude, which is kind of an improvisatory, slow, highly ornamented movement, a bourrée in two parts, which is a quick dance in two, a musette en rondo. Now, musettes were sort of bagpipes that you could find in France, and this musette is a piece that's meant to be pastoral like that and represent that, but of course it's more refined since it's late 18th century. And musette en rondo means that there's a theme you're going to hear come back over and over through that movement. And then the final two movements are a gigue, which is, as I usually tell my students, how the French think the Irish dance, and a set of rigadons.
Thank you.
That's music of Joseph Boismortier, music from the late 18th century, played by Jessica Donovan on her Baroque flute, solo playing live in Studio C by Jessica Donovan. We heard the second suite in G major, a five-movement dance suite by Joseph Boismortier. Jessica, great music, and clearly you love to play, or you wouldn't be able to carry half an hour of solo flute music by yourself.
I do indeed. I do love to play, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, sure. Jessica is a teacher, freelance performer, and also personnel manager of Music City Baroque, who has a concert coming up. We should mention that.
We do. This Sunday, October 9th, at 3 o'clock at Westminster Presbyterian Church, we're going to open our season with an autumnal-themed concert. I don't want to say just harvest, just Halloween, although there are spooky elements and autumnal elements to it. We'll be playing excerpts from Purcell's Fairy Queen, excerpts from Handel's Alcina. Also, our three wonderful violinists, Allison Nyquist, Karen Clark, and Laura Ross, are going to be featured in the Guido Four Seasons Concerto for three violins. I will be featured in Vivaldi's G minor La Notte Concerto. And then we're ending the program with a large, wonderful, chaotic piece. We're going to have natural horn and oboes and flutes and baroque piccolos and all the strings. It's Jean-Fleury Rebel's Les Elements. So please come and hear us and support Historically Informed Performance here in Nashville.
And that is an amazing piece, that Les Elements by Rebel.
It is.
Again, that's Music City Baroque at 3 o'clock Sunday, this Sunday at Westminster Presbyterian Church. Jessica Donovan, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you here. I'm Will Griffin. Up next week, pianist Agnes Juan is back in Studio C for another set of fine, clearly played piano music. Our thanks to the Tennessee Arts Commission and the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee for supporting Live in Studio C here at Classical 911, and also our thanks to our engineer Carl Peterson for making us sound good today on the radio.